There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 61. Going to talk about some home run to barrel leaders and not so good leaders in that Bloom boards later in the episode. Talk some recent news, play our games, and much, much more. You can find myself on Twitter at BDentrick, BDentrick. You can find the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and you can find my co-host, as always, on Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Milestone achieved this week, Bubba. We both booked our flights to first pitch. Yes, so yes. Getting closer to being able to taste it. Southwest, yeah. you gave me the heads up with the Southwest.
Dude, that sale was ridiculous. Like,
yeah. Like usually they have sales, but not like
that.
40 off was good. I think my flight, yours was under 200, right?
Round trip under 200. Last year it was like 450. So, yeah.
I think I did it with points because we had we were part of that Christmas Southwest fiasco, so we got a whole bunch of free flights and or whatnot. But from that fallout, but it was gonna be like $160 from Portland to Phoenix direct with golf clubs. So
that's the beauty of it. Golf clubs fly free. That's a great setup there. And that kind of goes
Southwest not a sponsor, by the way.
No. High Noon Southwest. Hey, I'm for sale. So just let me know. We can add stuff to the decals. But yeah, that's just another point we're trying to make. We're playing golf, folks, and the more the merrier at Dobson Ranch in Mesa, California, because the conference is in Mesa. And it was like a 10-minute Uber ride, give or take, something like that. And it wasn't too bad. So it's a fun golf course. So if you guys are interested, please let either one of us know as soon as possible, because we'd like to kind of get this set up to be even more entertaining and fun if we get a good group of people. And we need to do that with some time for Dobson Ranch to make it happen. So let us know if you can figure that one out.
Yeah, for sure. If any listeners are planning to go to first pitch, definitely let us know. If you don't play golf, that's cool too. We'll buy you some beers down there and we'll have a good time. Hopefully we'll have the live, we'll see what the powers at B.
Oh no, I already put it into motion.
All right.
Well, because I tweeted it out. The pressure's on now.
I have that live show. I don't think we screwed it up too bad last year. No. So it'd be awesome to meet you all, especially first timers down there. And if you play golf, even better, because we're going to play that Thursday, November 2nd. It's November 2nd through the 5th. Yep. The conference itself usually doesn't start typically happy hour that Thursday night. There's a welcome reception. So
it was perfect timing. We got back from golf, literally walked next door to the ballpark in Mesa, walked upstairs to the happy hour, which was food and booze, and we had a great time. It's perfect timing.
Yeah. Yep. So similar type deal this year. We'll probably formalize the golf stuff a little bit more and get some more folks involved, but cannot wait. Cannot wait.
Yeah. And something that Ryan said, because I know some people commented on our tweets about flights that they're coming for the first time. Awesome. Don't be afraid to reach out. We want to hang out with everybody. So it's a good time. And like Ryan said, for the live show, it was probably one of the coolest things that we've ever done. I think we could both say it was really, really awesome to do. And the place was half full, two thirds full. It was a decent sized little room filled up. And if you guys want to pack it out, the more the merrier. It's a good time in there. Hopefully we can tell the powers to be not to book this awesome panel next door to us at the same time. That'd be kind of cool.
had some competition, but that's okay. They're typically a first pitch is so much stuff packed into there. There's always running against something.
But. Yeah, but it'll be a good time. So, and I come in on Wednesday. So if you guys get there a day early, hit me up. It's kind of a free for all to do whatever we want to do. I just hung out at the bar and watched the World Series last year with Brent Hershey from HQ. The more the merrier for whatever you guys want to do. So let us know. It's a great time. Don't miss out. Baseball HQ FPAS. All right, let's talk about some news and notes. Mr. Bloomfield, we've got shocker injuries, but we'll start with a non-injury. Cody Bellinger's back with the Cubs. He got activated on Thursday, and he's playing first base, which means Matt Mervis was optioned back to AAA. There goes a big chunk of fab. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's tough, the Matt Mervis situation. It kind of makes sense, though, given the ratios that Mervis was posting. So we'll see him back. Like I actually wrote an article for HQ this week. It's one of my favorite ones to write. It goes through like the 10 steps of prospect stardom. And this is kind of an old school thing. Dates back. It was named after like A-Rod, who went up and down and struggled a couple times before he hit it. And I actually put Mervis on like step 3 of 10, which was you get all this hype, you get called up your rookie year and you struggle. And then step 4 is you get demoted. So Mervis went to step 4, but he'll be back. I'm not too worried long-term. The Bellinger thing makes sense. It sounds like it's temporary, or at least like he will go back to center field at some point, but I guess playing first is a little bit easier on his knee. So that makes sense. Mike Tauchman is, I think, the beneficiary. I mean, he's leading off every single day with like a 400 OBP, and that's pretty great. Has a couple steals, no homers, so you're not going to get counting stats, those types of counting stats from Tauchman. But if you're in a pinch, you need someone who gets on base, or points leagues, like he barely strikes out, he walks, gets on base, I think Tauchman at least has a little bit more leash. And again, at leadoff in front of a pretty decent lineup, I think that works.
Yeah, Tauchman's an OBP machine. He's Alex Chamberlain's favorite baseball player of all time.
Yeah, so make sure if there's one fantasy analyst linked to a actual baseball player, it will always be Mike Tauchman and Alex Chamberlain.
Yep. So make sure every time Tauchman does anything good, or you pick him up on Fab at Alex Chamberlain at Dolph Hulthagen, you won't regret it. He won't either. Tell him Bubba sent you. But it is a good spot for him, and I agree. I think it's temporary for Belly because, you know, it was like a week ago I was talking on the First Pitch show reporting news, and he was like getting ready to do baseball activities. There's really no timetable. And all of a sudden it ramped up super quick. He's in Iowa playing first base. I'm sitting there going, wait a minute. Like, this was not even close to a possibility a week ago, and now he's back. So I think it's like you said, we see it with, you know, Bryce Harper comes back early in DHs. Trevor Story is going to probably come back early DH, but as he works on getting his arm stretched out. So it's just little things like that. These teams need these bats back in the lineup as quickly as they can, and that's how they got Belly back in there. And because you can't really take the DH spot away from some of the other guys on that squad, so Bellinger plays first base, and it makes sense.
And I wonder, too, like when the Tauchman hot streak or whatever runs out and Belly goes back to center, what will happen at first? Will it be like Trey Mancini? Will they call Mervis back up? It's a little bit down the road, but just trying to think ahead a little bit.
I could see a Mervis recall. That would make the most sense to me. But, yeah, Mancini, he does work too. Vinny Pascantino, this sucks because shoulder injury, kind of, I don't know, it seemed like it came out of nowhere, and the team wasn't even that concerned about it at first. They compared it to the same injury he had last year where he missed like 2.5 weeks, and he came back and was productive. And then like 2 days later, he's having season-ending surgery to repair his labrum. So not good in many fronts because obviously Vinny P's out for the season. But also torn labrums, I know technology is different and everybody heals differently, but shoulder injuries take usually a little longer to get that power production back. Everyone's different. We'll see. But that's something to monitor going forward. That's a 2024 situation. For 2023, this really locks in Nick Prado, who I've been a big fan of. I've had him rostered many times on my teams already. He's playing a lot of outfield. He's normally a first baseman. This is who he is. And now he gets to slide right in there. He's leading off for the Royals and being quite productive, even though he still strikes out a decent amount. So Nick Prado is going to be locked and loaded to go. And it just opens up more spots for the slew of kind of mediocre outfielders that the Royals have.
Yeah, the leadoff aspect for Nick Prado is pretty sweet. A bit ahead of his skis in batting average. I don't think Prado is a 280 hitter, which is what he's hitting right now, given the K rate that you mentioned, Bubba. But you rack up those plate appearances, some pop, 24-year-old, like that Prado will be plenty effective. And I think in 12 teamers, he's like 80% rostered in 12 teamers. I think that should go up with this unfortunate Vinny P news. You touched on the mediocre outfielders. The one that I would like at least look at is Edward Olivares. I probably have said this like 5 years in a row and probably will say this five more years. I just love the guy. Hasn't played enough, but has started, I think, like six of the last seven. Did not start the Royals' last game. But I think Edward Olivares finally is going to get enough run here to be at least useful in streaming situations in deeper leagues.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. Nick Lodolo, just wanted to report this over here. He had a positive MRI on his foot injury a couple days ago, but they're saying it was positive, which is kind of weird. Okay, so what's positive about it? Because he's still in a walking boot, and they're still saying the timeline has not changed. The earliest he'll return is August. And so the reason I brought this up, because I know we've talked about it before, but it's been a few weeks, knowing that it's still not till August that he could return, how are you handling him on your rosters if you don't have IL spots?
Yeah, he's a drop. I mean, he's got to be a drop.
That's why I want to bring it up, because I know some people are still hanging on for dear life.
Yeah. If it was one of those, like, maybe all-star break kind of a thing, maybe I'd hold on. But I think you've got to drop because of inevitably you have other injuries on your team already. So it sucks. I mean, maybe your boy, your pick from last week or 2 weeks ago, Ben Lively.
Blake, he's pitching more like Blake Lively lately.
Yeah, he maybe is famous. He'll stay in the rotation. Luke Weaver, for better or worse, will stay in the rotation.
Andrew Abbott, baby.
You wish the Reds, like, for all the fireworks that they have on offense and so much talent that has come and to come in Cincinnati, if Lodolo was in that rotation, that this could actually be like a pretty legit NL Central contender.
What if they trade like CES for like two great pitchers?
God,
like send them to Miami for like Trevor Rogers and a guy that's actually starting right now. What if they did that?
I don't think they would. I don't think
they would. But I'm saying, like, just think about it. They already have the offense figured out. Now you get two pitchers. I'd rather have CES. I get it, but it's an option. Same.
I could see them moving, like, I don't know what they'd get for these guys.
Maybe like Spencer Steer for like Lucas Giolito or something.
Yeah. I don't think they, I don't know if they get like Giolito, but like a Steer, Fraley, Friedel, just for like some upgrade over Luke Weaver.
They're working like CES, Christian Encarnacion Strand, for those that don't know. They're working him out in right field. He started there on Thursday, so though that does open up the Friedel Fraley situation potentially, and moves guy. And then Senzel's always here. Maybe just package Senzel and go, hey, here's an extra. Maybe he'll play for you.
Probably not though.
Yeah, but you never know. Just see what happens. Like he's the Clint Frazier of the Reds. Here you go. Oh, God. All right. This one's a bummer as well. Nothing you're gonna do here because I don't think you're dropping him. But Yordan Alvarez out 4 to 6 weeks. The reason I bring it up is like I say, you don't think you're dropping him. This is the end of July. You'll get him back, so still a long ways away. But when you look at the reports, it's doomy and gloomy. We're gonna no baseball activities for 2 weeks. Then we'll reevaluate him for a week, and then we'll assess how we're going to have him come back to play baseball. That's not good.
Grand Slam, Chris Taylor, live during the show, which doesn't make for great podcast.
Was it off of Cease by chance? Was it off of Cease?
No, Cease got pulled, and so some of the runs were from Cease. But wow, crazy. Yordan. Yes, an obvious hold. I mean, unlike Lodolo, you're holding on to Yordan as long as you can. It does sound like, it does sound bad, but there's nothing we can really do about it. I mean, we talked about it last week a little bit. Corey Jolks is getting like the lion's share of DH/outfield at bats, but I'm not too excited for him.
Yanner Diaz is playing like every day, baby.
Yeah, and not even at catcher. Like when you have a catcher eligible guy who's splitting time between first base and DH, that is glorious. And while we're on the Astros, Bubba, how about Jose Abreu? What the hell?
I was hoping this would lead to this because this is now, I talked about my love-hate relationship with Twitter earlier before we got on the mic here, but Jose Abreu is a topic of conversation across the board. And his month of June, I mentioned it like a day or two ago on the first pitch. He had like in his first 12 games in June, he's hitting over 400, like 425 or 452 with 13 homers or 13 RBIs in 12 games, three homers, three doubles. He is, I it's hard for me to say he's back, but he's getting closer.
Yeah. And I like, I'll be the first one to admit, I mean, even, I think it was last week we both gave him ones for not rebounding, and because Abreu was one of the lowest, furthest fallers from preseason drafts to the midseason second chance drafts that the NFBC had. Yeah, not ready to like proclaim him back, but it is an awesome sign to see that Abreu can at least still hit the ball hard. And like, I mean, a couple of his homers were no doubters. Like, it was kind of funny the first home run that Abreu hit in Oakland, I think it was, like barely got over the fence. Mm-hmm. He's had a couple shots. So you just kind of hope things continue that way. But it's a funny game, man. Cannot predict how some of this, we all write them off for dead and goes on, at least for now, a mini hot streak. We'll see.
Yeah. The Astros need it. So, yeah, he's a guy, because I said I dropped him everywhere I could like a month ago. I don't regret it. That was, to me, the right move at the time. I'm curious to see how those fab bids look here pretty soon. Another weird one that came out on Wednesday, Joe Musgrove, who he's had four really good starts in a row, and I thought maybe it's because he's ramping back up with the missed time in spring, and now he's back to being Joe Musgrove. Well, he's dealing with elbow bursitis that he may have happened while he was using a hyperbolic chamber to rehab his toe in spring training. He said it's something he's just going to deal with all year and pitch through it. So how does that make you feel?
There's lots to unpack there. I don't really know what elbow bursitis is, and I don't know what did you say, hyperbolic chamber?
Those are those things that like they basically take the air out of something. Like, you'll see guys like wear the ones on their legs that they walk all day. They have full body ones you can sit in. That's like from the neck down type thing. Huh. It's to help speed up healing, basically.
Well, didn't work here, I guess.
I don't think they make them in my size, so I wouldn't know.
It's bizarre. Especially because, I mean, like you were saying, Bubba, like usually a pitcher injury, especially with the arm, like there's some lower velocity, there's loss of command, there's loss of control. Musgrove was just hitting his stride. Yep. Last five starts, 24% strikeout rate, 5% walk rate, had a 286 ERA, 332 expected ERA at HQ. So, I don't know enough about elbow bursitis to know if he can pitch through it. Like, that would be fantastic. I wouldn't be too worried if Musgrove and the staff think that it's not a serious issue and he can go. Let's do it. But it definitely doesn't sound warm and fuzzy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's concerning to me because I have some Musgrove shares. I'm a big fan of Joe Musgrove. And now I'm like, what are we doing right now? This is not great. Another not great one. It happened within like 5 minutes apart. JD Davis sprains his ankle at the same time. Mitch Haniger breaks his gets a fracture in his forearm. They already announced he's supposed to have surgery on Thursday, actually, as the day we record. And then they'll get a timetable for his return. What I kind of think of it as is it's Carson Kelly. He had a fractured arm. He was on the 60 DIL, missed a couple months. He just returned this week to the Diamondbacks. With Haniger, it's middle of June. I'm thinking sometime middle to late August, potentially, with Haniger, unless like it's a really not too bad and heals quicker. But I expect a 60-day IL situation pretty soon. The biggest question I have is, because you can drop Haniger, that's fine. And he was heating up too. That's the bummer.
Yeah.
He was heating up.
I know.
And people say he's like injury prone. This is the flukiest of fluky things. Like, just stop. Like, a lot of his injuries are actually kind of fluky. That's a whole other conversation. Luis Matos got the call. And as a Giants guy, before you give your smart analysis, I want to give my two cents from the Giants standpoint here. I had a lot of questions in the Discord, like, should I add him? Should I add him? I said, he's good. He played really well. Crushed it in AAA. We know this. He's a power speed guy. We know all these things. The one bit of cold water I will throw on this are the San Francisco Giants love the platoon. Yeah. He started and hit second against Jordan Montgomery. When Montgomery came out of the game, Mike Yastrzemski pinch hit for Matos. It was either Yaz or Conforto, one of the two. They went back to back. So he was quickly taken out of the game. I don't know if that'll be a long-term thing, but it's definitely something to watch this weekend because they face three right-handed pitchers in LA. So see how Montas's playing time goes. But hey, at least the kid got to enjoy Disneyland today. So that was cool. What do you got here?
You covered it, man. I mean, what we don't want to see is probably what the Giants are going to do, and that's just platoon everybody. Because like you're starting to see Austin Slater play a little bit.
Because they're healthy. They're finally healthy.
Yep, he's healthy. He's playing against lefties. You've got the lefty hitter platoon brigade of like Peterson. Crawford's probably – he's playing himself into a platoon at this point. Maybe even Conforto.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like you can't – it's easy to look at the stat line for Luis Matos and get excited. Like the minuscule strikeout rate at AAA, he hit almost 400 with the power speed like you were talking about. But it doesn't really matter if you're not – if you're especially in Matos's case on a short side of a platoon. So you're right. Like this weekend will be pretty telling in lead up to Fab, whether or not Matos is a regular or at least a semi-regular, like how many starts will he get against three righties this weekend? Definitely worth watching. Cause I mean, if Matos does play every single day,
then he's worth some money for sure.
Yeah. Yep.
So. Yeah, I'm with you. I just want an example I'll give you from the Giants to a T because they were hurt a lot like last month. That's why a lot of these guys played lefty, right? Didn't matter. Once guys got healthy, like you said, Crawford came back. All these guys came back. Casey Schmidt's platooning now. I think if you asked like 3 weeks ago, no one would thought Casey Schmidt would platoon the rest of the season. I said that on the first show when we talked about Casey Schmidt getting called up, be careful. And I got him in a few leagues like 3 weeks later for like $10. It was fun. I dropped him this week because he's platooning. I hope Montos plays. As a Giants fan, I'd love to see him out there. I think he gives them the best chance to win. But this is Gabe Kapler, and this is the Giants, and this is what they do, and they still win this way. So watch this week, and that's all I wanted to bring up on this one because I had so many people the other day going, I got to pick him up. You can pick him up. I'm just warning you. This is what the Giants do, so be careful.
Yep.
Yoan Moncada, he goes to the IL, locks in some more Jake Berger sessions. Double dong on Wednesday. He went deep on Thursday. It seems like every time Jake Berger's about to lose his job, someone gets hurt. Eloy gets hurt. And then right when Eloy comes back, Yoan Moncada goes to the IL. It's like the baseball gods are like, hey, Berger needs to stay in the lineup.
Make this
Don't
happen.
Screw this up. Don't screw this up, White Sox. We got this for you. So we got Berger time for sure. Like, pick him up everywhere you can.
Plus, we got the Bubba tweet, all caps, Berger King, with the
I was wondering if I was expecting to get fat jokes thrown my direction, but people actually understood it. So I was good. I had Burger King dong in all caps, but I didn't want to like have Elon Musk like suspend me from Twitter.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed. And that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast is brought to you by AT&T Fiber with AllFi. Something tells me that the guy watching sports for 13 hours straight on Sunday, who then stays up watching the recaps of those 13 hours, then calls his friends to talk about it, is definitely going to notice that half a second delay.
Get AT&T Fiber with AllFi and watch sports any time of day from anywhere in your house. Live like a Gigillionaire. Limited availability in select areas. Go to att.com/hypergig to check eligibility. Coverage may require extenders at additional charge.
Yeah, that might be a bridge too far. I mean, the White Sox can't keep playing Yoan. I mean, obviously they can't now with a back thing, but like a 279 OBP, 370 slug, three homers on the season, like in 147 plate appearances. It's just fascinating to me why the White Sox would continue to play Moncada over Berger. And so hopefully, yes, the fantasy guides, you don't want to see anybody get hurt, but like I think this is the move for the White Sox. So I think Moncada, I think we got a listener question semi-related to Yoan Moncada. Like, I don't even think in 15-team leagues, he doesn't do anything. Even if he's healthy, he doesn't do anything. And this is a back injury, and we talk about this all the time, how back injuries can linger. Already sidelined like
3 to 4 weeks earlier.
Exactly. So it's not even, for me, it's not even, it's an easy drop.
He gone. I want to ask you, I didn't put it on the outline, but since we're talking White Sox, the guy's not doing anything. Tim Anderson is hitting 253 with zero home runs. He only has 9 doubles on the season. He has a 0.45 ISO. He has 7 stolen bases, 21 runs, 10 RBIs, a 64 WRC plus. I could keep going down the bad production. Less than 4% barrel rate from Tim Anderson. The reason I bring it up is there's some very smart people like Scott Jenstead, Draft Cheat, and others talking about this on Twitter. These are the good conversations I like to see, is guys going back and forth on what to do. In a 12-team league, I have him in a 12-team, and I'm very close to dropping him because literally Ezekiel Tovar is outperforming him. Like, there's dudes outperforming him on your waiver wire. I know Tim Anderson's got the name, but I think this is a conversation like we've had people ask us, when do you just stop caring about the name and move on from a player? And I think Tim Anderson fits this mold pretty darn well right about now.
And I'll start with the disclaimer that I'm higher and probably always have you are, been.
That's why
I'm
higher.
I'm the Tim Anderson guy. Yes, it's the name, but it's the name because of the track record. Like, Tim Anderson, despite the injuries, has been for years a very productive fantasy player. And when I look at the underlying skills, and maybe I just go down with this ship, the K rate is not very far. It's still in fantastic shape. Tim Anderson has 6 barrels, like, should have at least a couple home runs. The hard contact it's never been great, but it's been good enough to where we'd expect like a 10 home run season out of Tim Anderson. And he's 7 for 8 from the stolen base department. The only thing with that is Tim Anderson, let me check in May. Only has 2 steals since May. So that's like the part where the post IL Tim Anderson has not been running as much. And that's where I get a little bit nervous, because to make this work, you have to have Tim Anderson hit near 300, which again, I think he'll get closer. He's not a 250 hitter that he's showing right now. And he's got to run a lot. Right now, neither of those are happening. So I get it. I just think we're going to see a surge from Tim Anderson at some point in the second half, just because the track record and the skills aren't very far off of what we've seen from when Tim Anderson was a pretty good player.
All right. I just want to get your 2 cents on that one, because I have not dropped them yet, but every week I look at it and like,
Oh, I get it. I mean, the actual rotisserie stat line is terrible. 253, no home runs, 10 RBI.
Yeah.
It's 10 bad. RBI.
It's brutal. It's very, very bad. Like, Yoan Moncada, it actually has maybe a better stat line.
Whoa. Another bridge too far. Bubba.
All right. The last bit of news we'll drop here is Zach Neto, who's actually been pretty darn productive out of one of the early ads this year, starting to really hit over the last like week, too. He's on the IL with a side/oblique. They haven't given a full analysis on that one yet, but it seems like an oblique situation. Just want to throw that out there. It's Luis Rengifo, maybe. Andrew Velasquez is getting time. Nothing to really run home to, but they might be replacements for Tim Anderson. So I'm just throwing them out there.
Yeah, terrible timing. Yeah. Neto had 3 home runs.
Yeah, he was heating up
this week. Andrew Velasquez, like, I wouldn't totally dismiss
him. Sneaky last year.
9 home runs, 17 steals, and 350 plate appearances last year for Andrew Velasquez. He had a green light with the Angels last year. And if you need steals, like, yes, Andrew Velasquez is going to cost you in batting average, so just beware of that. But it's actually a semi-decent, like, power-speed combo that you probably won't see on many. And I'm talking deep leagues, 15-teamers, and obviously AL only. That's actually a semi-attractive skill set to me if you can stomach the batting average fall from Velasquez.
Yeah, I'm with you. I know in 15s I had him rostered at times last year, so we'll see how that plays out. All right, let's get to our weekend matchup game of the week. And don't look now, folks. Bloomfield's coming back. So how'd things go last week, Ryan?
Bloomfield's coming. The sweep. sweep just like your Giants. Who the Giants sweep this week? The Cardinals?
Cardinals, baby.
Bloom swept Bubba. So okay. we had my late addition, Ryan Noda, take out Joey Weimer 5-3. On the pitching side, Griffin Canning, who continues to pitch pretty well of late, took down your Daniel Lynch 9-7. They were both close, but match play. Win's a win.
Win's a win. So, I'll take it at least because for once our pitching didn't both suck. So I'll take this as a win situation overall. But yes, you're up 10-7 now, and we're about to getting closer to the halfway point of the season. Gives you plenty of time to come back. So where are you headed this week? What matchups are you looking forward to this week?
I was looking at my hitter that I'm going to grab is Tristan Casas. So we're again doing 50% rostered or less in 12-team NFBC leagues, and Tristan Casas barely fits the bill, 49% rostered. So I am I'm within the rules here. Casas has been a lot better, well, slightly better lately, especially like 320 OBP, couple homers in the last month. Nothing special, but I think it comes around at some point. Red Sox, I believe, get three righties this week. They do, against the Yankees, with a pretty decent matchup rating from HQ. So Tristan Casas is my hitter choice this week.
Yeah, my hitter choice this week is Yastrzemski. Talked about earlier, Yaz. He's homered in back-to-back games. He's getting healthy again for now. That's a Yastrzemski thing. He can be a buzzkill at the plate as well from time to time, but he gets three righties this weekend. I saw Bobby Miller was supposed to pitch on Friday, but if you look at the RotoWire, it's Andrees / bullpen game, then Miller Saturday, Gonsolin on Sunday. So I'll have to see how that pans out before I publish my HQ matchups article. But yeah, I'm going with Yastrzemski, going against three right-handed pitchers. Means you should play every day, at least start every day, maybe run into one, see how things go there.
In terms of hitting streamer matchups, the best team this week rating wise is the Braves. They get three against Colorado righties, which is going to be fantastic. But from a fantasy aspect, like, I don't think there's many Braves. Mets against St. Louis, pretty fortunate, and then the Twins get three against Detroit this weekend. So that's also pretty juicy. I don't know who's pitching for Detroit. It's Alexander Wentz and, man, Mason Englert.
Wow. That was a fishing tournament. Fun.
Don't know who that is. So bombs away against
Buxton's
Detroit.
Back, baby. Buxton's back. Have some fun there. Who you got pitching this week?
Going back to the well. I think I took him a couple weeks ago, but Tanner Houck, who has just been going against the Yankees, the judgeless Yankees, and that's a pretty weak lineup. I know they just got Stanton back and he homered the other day off Scherzer, but that's a pretty good matchup, I think, for Houck. The biggest thing with Houck, he's getting better, like, quietly over the last month. His last five starts, 5.19 ERA for Tanner Houck. Beneath that is a 20% K minus walk, which is really good, especially for a starter. And he's missing a ton of bats, 16% swing strike rate for Tanner Houck, like, especially in our game where it's strikeouts and innings minus runs. I think the K's are going to be there for Tanner Houck. And I also just think in terms of like streaming in 12 teamers, Tanner Houck is he's 35% rostered. I think that's a pretty decent add in most matchups going forward, the way he's pitched lately.
Yeah, targeting the Yankees right now is a beautiful thing. So that's not a bad pick at all. I'm going with a little bit of a riskier pick, I'll be honest, but I have my philosophy behind it. I'm going with Dick Mountain, Rich Hill. This is going to be a big one. He's going at Milwaukee, a Milwaukee team that is scuffling at the plate right now. It seems like everybody's slumping. Maybe Rich Hill is the answer they need to get things going. But again, like Ryan said, for our game, it's innings pitched plus Ks minus earned runs. Earned runs could be a problem. He's given up only three in his last two starts. What Rich Hill does, and I've witnessed this watching him, like when he faced the Giants, he had six runs, still went six innings. They let him go out there. He is their innings eater every fifth day because they have so many young pitchers. It's like, hey, Rich, you're throwing 100 pitches. I don't care right now. You're 40-something years old. You're pitching. So I'm pretty confident in five-plus innings out of Rich Hill. He's gone six and two-thirds and seven in his last two starts, which I'm pretty pumped on. And the other part I like a lot, he has six or more Ks in four of his last five starts. So it's a combination of he's going to get a ton of innings more often than not. Like he's had two starts below five innings pitched all year and 13 starts. The strikeouts will be there. He's got 67 Ks and 72 innings. And it's just a matter of limiting the damage. Like, go 3 runs or less, I'll take my chances. So going through the motions here, Rich Hill is a dude, like, I recommended him in DFS until he got pushed back till Friday. Supposed to pitch on Thursday. I think he's got some viability as a cheap streaming type player this week.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how he's doing this. I don't know how he's doing this, but whatever.
Yeah, it's wild. It's Rich Hill, baby. Do we get, that just reminds me, I wonder if we get the players' uniforms again this year. I haven't heard anything about that. Rob Manfred's a fun hater, so we might not, but if we can get one last season of Dick Mountain, that would be amazing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was wondering, like, what made you think of that? And now I know. Yeah. Did that happen last year? Players weekend?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Maybe
I feel like it hasn't happened for a while. Like, I totally forgot about it.
But he did for like every year they had it. He had Dick Mountain on the back of his jersey, and I was just like, "How did this get allowed across baseball? It's amazing."
No, RIP. Players Weekend, as I Wikipedia, Players Weekend was an annual MLB event held from 2017 to 2019.
It's been that long.
It's been gone since COVID.
Fun haters. Fun hater Rob Manfred.
Following the COVID season, changed that season. Uniform suppliers from Majestic to Nike.
Effing break.
The event did not return for 2021. Yeah, it's been 4 years, man.
That's garbage. Garbage. Come on, baseball. Be better. Be better in so many levels. But, all right. Yeah. Let's have some fun. Bloom board time. I like this one. We've done this one before. Every time I see it, it's kind of a hat tip to Toby. This is one of his favorite stats out there. So why don't you let everybody know what we're looking at tonight on tonight's Bloom Board?
Yeah, and I'll pull it up for the YouTube crowd, see if I can. Homer to barrel. So we did this last year, but it's a good, I think, kind of annual refresher, at least a way to check in. It's basically taking the – it's – like what I think is a pretty simple comparison of results, which is your home runs versus your skills, which is a barrel, which is just the ability to hit the ball hard at the right launch angle. And so your league average and the general gist of this, I took the 10 highest and the 10 lowest home runs per barrel. And that's going to be the guys that we talk through. There's a lot of nuance to this. So a couple things that I'll bring up right away is like ballpark. Each ballpark can vary greatly in home runs per barrels. Your league average is around 55%. So roughly, if you want to get a rough gauge for how good a hitter's power has been, you take their barrels, divide it by two, maybe add another homer or whatever, and that's the number of homers they on average should have in a neutral park. So you kind of don't want to be there's the board. You kind of don't want to be on the leader side of this. Like you kind of don't, it's been good. If you have a high home run to barrel rate, like you have hit a lot of home runs and that's obviously very useful, but you kind of don't want to be in terms of going forward on the high list, because most of the time this is going to kind of fall back to where either your league average would go to or where your ballpark's average would go to. And you do want to be on, in terms of like buying low on some of these guys, the low list, which we'll talk about. I mean, we'll talk about both of them, but same kind of deal. Like you've got I'll just say Brian Reynolds is the number one guy. The lowest home run per barrel rate, has 27 barrels this year, has 7 home runs. Mm-hmm. So like the production has not been there for Brian Reynolds, but the raw power is as good as ever. He just has not been rewarded. So you would think someone, if you take again, that kind of rule of thumb, 27 barrels should be like 14, 15 home runs. He's got 7. So
Brian Reynolds has not hit a home run since May 26th. I just looked that up now. That is insane. He is on quite the drought. So
main event team, he's my man. So that's that would make sense.
Well, and he had that stretch where he was just crushing everything for a while as well. Yep. So he was due to cool down a bit, I guess. But yeah, it's been quite the cool down for Mr. Brian Reynolds. But you know, he's still hitting .286, 37 runs, 38 RBIs, and you mentioned the striking out less than 18%. And you mentioned the barrel rate. He's getting tons of barrels. He's got a 14% barrel rate and a 53% hard hit rate. I think the ballpark obviously plays a factor there. PNC is a tough ballpark to hit in, for one. But like you said, this is the side you want to be on potentially. And his teammates on here too, Brian Hayes. So there's two Pittsburgh Pirates. Hayes, we'll talk about too. He's a whole nother enigma when it comes to power. He's more of a ground ball guy, where, you know, Brian Reynolds ain't as bad in that sense compared to Brian Hayes. A 40% ground ball rate. He's got a 9.7% home run to fly ball. Like, there's a lot of things that should be changing for him.
The thing I'll add with Brian Reynolds, and we'll get to the rest of the list. It's just funny looking back at, like, so same ballpark, same team, same everything last season, maybe different ball, but even juicier ball perhaps this season. Brian Reynolds last year had 32 barrels. This year has 27 barrels. He's almost at the number he was last year in less than half of plate appearances. Last year, Brian Reynolds hit 27 home runs. This year, 7 home runs. So that goes to show Brian Reynolds has actually doubled his barrel rate from last season, when he hit 27 home runs and only has 7 home runs to show for it. So, like, I would just kind of scanning down this list, Brian Reynolds from a home run aspect is probably the best quote unquote buy low of anyone on here. The raw power is absolutely still there and actually improving despite the 7 homers.
Yeah, it's very impressive what he's doing. Another guy on this list that I'm extremely buying low on, and I keep telling people, please don't give up on him. It's MJ Melendez. I was actually happy to see him on this list. 5 homers. Well, happy might not be the right word, but you know what I mean. When you're looking for a guy to bounce back, 5 homers with 19 barrels, 26% home run to barrel rate. But you look at it, Melendez, he's got a better barrel percentage than last year. He's got a better hard hit rate than last year, almost 53% overall. There's just, I don't know. I feel like there's so much more to come from Melendez. You can dig it even deeper on the stuff he's doing at the plate, and I think he's definitely a buy low candidate, unless I'm crazy. Could be crazy. Like, his fly ball rate's up 9% from last year. So what are you seeing with MJ Melendez? Maybe I am the crazy one.
No, I mean, same. It's a similar story to what we just talked about with Brian Reynolds. Hasn't had, like, the power improvement that Reynolds has, but from a 7% barrel rate last season for Melendez, 7% this year. Last year for Melendez, 44% hard hit rate. This year, 52%. So he's hitting the ball harder, not getting rewarded for it. And so, like, it's, I feel like a broken record, because I know we talk about Melendez. He's come up a few times, but, like, and I know it's very frustrating to try and hold, but I do think a power surge is coming. Like, I'm quite confident MJ Melendez is going to start hitting home runs, maybe not in bunches, but the power is there. The strikeout rate is up a little bit, like 29% isn't that great. So I don't know, like, if the batting average is going to move up much from 220, but the power is there. In two catcher leagues, I think you hold Melendez and just kind of wait for it. And I think the playing time is mostly been there. He's not leading off anymore. We just talked about Prado, but Melendez is, well, hitting third. So
yeah, he's fine.
Playing time is not an issue.
No, he's not going anywhere. Another guy I want to talk about on this list is Matt Chapman. He 9 home runs, 33 barrels, 27% home run per barrel. He started out this year just gangbusters. It slowed down a bit, but he's still hitting 271 with an 18.3% barrel rate, which is the best of his career, a near 59% hard hit rate, the best of his career. But it's weird. Like, you see the fly ball is about the same, but his home run to fly ball is 10.6%. He's usually 15% or higher, give or take. Yep. So it just a lot of things are even better than they've been in the past. Like, his strikeout rate's is about the same as last year. His BABIP's through the roof. The fact that the profile of ground balls and fly balls hasn't changed a bunch tells me that there's a lot of home runs potentially coming from that bat. So what's your thoughts on Matt Chapman?
An absolute smash for me in terms of buying, especially the power. Matt Chapman has the third most barrels in baseball behind Ronald Acuna.
He's good.
And Aaron Judge. He's good. So too. Like, yeah, two guys that are pretty good. He's ahead of Shohei Ohtani. He's ahead of Matt Olson. He's ahead of Jorge Soler, Big Meat Pete, all those guys. And to only have 9 home runs for that is kind of criminal. So Matt Chapman, I don't know if the batting average quite stays at like 270. Yeah. The rub with Chapman going in was like low batting average, but 30 home run power. The K rate hasn't really budged, like you were saying. So lower batting average, but more homers to come for Mr. Chapman.
His teammate, Vladito, hits this list as well. 9 homers and 29 barrels and 31% home run to barrel. We've talked about him before on some other lists, it feels like, because, you know, the numbers-wise, he's actually playing pretty similar to last year, minus the power surge, but the average is better and the strikeouts are similar and so on and so forth. So what are your thoughts on Vlad, who he you feel like there could be a hot month coming his way in a real quick time?
Probably. It's been a bad year, man. 280, 9 home runs and 3 steals for someone who was going. Was he a first? He was more second round, wasn't he, by the end?
By the end, yeah. But he was late first early on, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, probably deserves like 15, 16 home runs. So the hard contact's been there. The thing with Vlad is always the ground ball rate. So I always want to check on that. 52% ground balls last season, 46% now. So that's not bad. And the thing with barrel rate too is it does kind of incorporate your ground ball. Since no ground ball can really be a barrel, that does kind of cover it. So I think Vlad, and I don't think it's a Toronto thing. I don't know if there's any other Blue Jays on here outside of Vlad and Chapman. They did just move the fences in, so like you would think it would go good up thing. But whatever. I think Vlad, I worry about, like, I don't know, from a taking a like longer view on Vlad, to take someone who doesn't really run. I know he had 8 steals last year, only 3 this year, but like you need him to do more than even 30 home runs and like a 280 batting average. I just, at the price that Vlad was going at, I was out. And I think even with the power improvement that's likely to come, it's still not a second round guy to me.
Oh no, I won't be back in on him. And don't get me wrong, he'll have 1 year where we're all just like, wow, he's going to bust out again. Like, he'll have one of those years, but won't be on my roster. I don't think I've ever had him on my roster, to be honest. So might be keeping that trainer going. I'll let you talk about this individual first, because I have some very, very big thoughts on him, because I pounded this drum for a bit. Spencer Torkelson, 7 home runs on 21 barrels, at 33% home run to barrel rate. What are you seeing when you look at Torque? Because, I'll leave it at that. I'll let you have the floor for this one first.
Interested to see what you say about Torque. The big caveat with Torkelson on this list is Detroit is where barrels go to die. Yep. So this is a ballpark related thing with Spencer Torkelson, and he's not going to be changing ballparks anytime soon. Last year's version of this list, the number one guy in terms of lowest homer to barrel was Riley Green. Almost said Hunter Green. Riley Green, and there were a couple other Detroit Tigers on there. Ballpark does play a big factor into this. So I don't know if Spencer Torkelson, I don't think you can just take 21 barrels, divide by 2, and add 1 or 2 homers and say that's where he should be at. The thing you add on to that is, like, Torkelson has, in terms of batting average, almost 700 plate appearances of like a 270 BABIP, and that's not very great either. He's hitting 235 this season, at 203 last year. Like, the prospect pedigree is there, could turn this around at any point, but I'm pretty low on Torque for those reasons. And you're nodding, so maybe I gave the right answer.
I'm not low on him at all. So
high on him.
You gave the hot opposite answer. Added him a couple times this year for a couple bucks in OCs. And you gave the big sample size. That's fine. I look at this as a kid that came up maybe too soon. Like, he came up the same year he was drafted, and he needed to get his feet wet. He's getting more comfortable. I talked about it like on preview shows with you and others, that they made a point, and Miguel Cabrera took him under his wing. Like, hey, you are the first baseman. This is your team. And I think he's starting to get comfortable. And this is not a small sample, but it's big enough for me. Since May 1st, he's had 70 plate appearances. Still not huge. I get it. But he's hitting 253 over that stretch with a 317 BABIP, 13% walk, 23.5% K. He has 5 of his 7 home runs in that stretch. He's even stolen a bag, which is impressive. But what I really like to see is a 13% barrel rate and near 53% hard hit rate over that stretch. He's starting to get comfortable at the plate. And I agree with what you said about Detroit's ballpark. That's been documented forever. Nick Castellanos is the first one that comes to mind all the time when it comes to that ballpark. That is clear as day. But with a guy like him, so the 33% home run to barrel, Okay, so he doesn't go 22% higher to 55. Sure. What's to say 45 to 48%? So now we're talking he could have like 11 home runs right now or something. I don't know. I'm just off the top of my head.
Sure.
Stuff.
Yep.
So maybe now he turns into a 25 home run guy and he hits 250 to 260. That's got some legs. And so, like, looking at Torque, I just think there's more there. He could be one of those dudes that's like a, you know, the Andrew Vaughn types that never maybe gets to the full pedigree we want, but it's a guy we like because the hit tool is still very, very good. So Torkelson's a guy I think that you can buy low on, and you can actually get him low is the point I wanted to make there compared to some other guys on this list. So that's why I was talking about Torque.
Easy to forget, age 23 season. He is
he was the number one guy at Arizona State, and then like came straight up. Yep. So, that was all I wanted to say. I think there's more to like about Torque than we might lead on. Who else did you want to talk about here? I know we have a question on Trent Grisham. We could leave that till the end, or we can bring it up now if you'd like. I guess we could bring it up now. Let me, Eric Samolsky asks, I want to get it word for word real quick because it was very good here. How can Grisham hit the ball so hard and so often and not be good for fantasy? He has six homers with 23 barrels, 26% home run to barrel rate. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a this year thing. Like, I'm looking back at Grisham, what Grisham has done the previous few seasons. The homer to barrel rate, 83% in 2021, which is this mad high, 68% last year. A little bit closer to normal this year, 26%. Like, Trent Grisham has pretty much the same number of barrels as he had last year already this season, 23 versus 25. Last year, Grisham had 17 homers. This season, Grisham has six. Now, to Eric's question about why can't he be good in fantasy, for me, it's two numbers. It is a 47% fly ball rate and a 29% strikeout rate. You cannot strike out that often and hit the ball in the air that often if you're not like a prodigious power bat, if you're not like a Pete Alonso, a Matt Olson, that type of player. You can't hit the ball in the air that long. You're going to hit what Trent Grisham hits, which is like 200. The HQ expected batting average on Grisham's like 220. So maybe there's been like some bad BABIP luck there, but you're basically looking at a guy who's going to hit 200. You almost want him. Well, you do want him to run, but you almost think, I almost think of that like COVID season when Trent Grisham hit 10 homers, 10 steals, and 250 plate appearances. He had 13 steals the following season, only four this season, four for seven. And so, like, he's not running. He's not hitting for batting average. The power will improve. I'm pretty confident in that. But it's not enough for me. The thing with Grisham, like, the defense is very good. The OBP is very good. So in OBP leagues, he's there. And I think the playing time is pretty safe. But I don't see him hitting over like 200, 220 without many bags. And if you get like 15, 20 homers with that, that's not that great of a player.
Yeah, that's how he's always been, like low average. Kind of, he'll play every day because he's okay defensively. But yeah, there's a lot to not like. And by the way, I loved your tweet when he quote tweeted, well, speak of the devil, he hits a home run on Thursday. But if you read the tweet carefully, well, a home run in 15 of 30 ballparks.
No, it wasn't a home. It was not a home run.
Oh, it was a double. Oh, okay.
So I'm guessing a lot of people follow. It's called Would It Dong. And basically, like, I feel like you came up with the name of the damn thing. But it's basically like any borderline home run or not. I guess it's all automated. It says like in how many ballparks it would have been based on the exit velocity, where it was hit, and that sort of thing. And so it's funny, right after Eric's question, Grisham came up on the Would It Dong thing, and it was a double that would have been a home run in 15 out of 30 parks. So like, that was just a funny kind of example of like, yeah, kind of one of those years where Grisham should have some more pop.
Perfect. All right, let's go to the opposite side of the spectrum here. The overachievers, the potential regression candidates that we don't want to talk about, but we are. And we'll start at the top here with Isak Paredes. Yeah. 11 homers, 7 barrels. That's 157% home run to barrel. And it's kind of funny because none of the guys are on the list here. I tweeted it out over the weekend. I was writing an article about like risers and fallers from the last week. And like Nolan Jones, Gary Sanchez, and there's one other dude. Each had two home runs in the week. Neither one of them were barreled. None of them were barreled. And you're sitting there going, how does that happen? And then I see this list. And I'm like, 11 homers with seven barrels for Esoc, who I think most people know by now, big fan over here. Don't like seeing that, but I've always been a believer in his power. And I thought Detroit kind of hampered that power. It's hard not to listen to the argument that this could regress, Ryan, so give it to me.
Yeah, it's just interesting. Torque has three times as many barrels as Esoc Paredes has four or fewer home runs on the season. The crazy thing with Esoc, and I, there is something to this. I don't know if the Deadpool hitter himself, Rob DiPietro, is listening. Every single one of Esoc Paredes' home runs are dead pulled.
He's the like not D. even Gregorius the left center, from the right side. He's a DD from the right side.
Exactly. Like not even left center. It is crazy. I probably should have pulled up his home run spray chart before the show. We put it up here, but it is wild to see. And you can search this on Baseball Savant if you go look. His home runs are all extremely pulled. He knows that park. It's almost like if Esoc Paredes was in Houston, he'd have like 20 home runs by now. And I do think there is something to that where Paredes just he knows that park and how to get it out of there without barreling. And most of those home runs that he's hitting are not barrels, but they're all right down left field in Tampa. So we talk a lot about ballpark. I brought it up with Torque as kind of a reason to be down. Paredes, like, yes, the power pace cannot stay this crazy. Like nobody, almost nobody over a full season has more home runs than barrels. It just doesn't happen. But I don't think it'll crash as hard as some people think.
Yeah, Daniel Broderick asked us, so Paredes can be explained by his ability to pull everything, pretty much. That's the easy, that's the lazy answer, but the correct answer probably.
The deeper dive, though, is that the key word in that is ability. Is that a repeatable skill, or is that just something that Paredes has done 11 times this year and it's fluky? I have not run the numbers on the research on it, but I'm very interested to see like how sticky a pulled fly ball is from year to year.
Yeah, that's a great question. Let's go to the next one here. Francisco Alvarez. This is a fun one because he's starting to get pretty regular playing time. He's turning into the hitter of many thought that we should expect. He's got 12 barrels and 12 home runs. That's 100% for you keeping track at home on the success rate there. And that's obviously not sustainable, but you never know. Maybe it is. So what are your thoughts on Francisco Alvarez, the rookie Mets catcher?
Yeah, I mean, this is where I want to be a little careful. I mean, you this was your main argument with Pork, right? Like, and Alvarez even more so, like adjusting to big league catching is, not very easy as well. So like, I don't want to kind of crap on Alvarez. Like, yes, the home runs, he's a little ahead of his skis, but you look at the skills that Francisco Alvarez has put together so far. He's actually been kind of screwed in the batting average department. So for whatever quote unquote luck he might have had in home runs, Francisco Alvarez is running a 237 BABIP and he's hitting 236 with a pretty decent strikeout rate. So like, I'm not worried about Francisco Alvarez at all. I think he could be an absolute star, and we're kind of seeing that. I mean, the hard contact, he has an 8% barrel rate with 24% strikeouts. Like that's pretty damn good for a catcher of Alvarez's age. And then you throw on the prospect pedigree on top of it. Like someone I'm really not worried about.
Yeah. I think he's gonna be just fine. Even if it like cuts back, he's still probably gonna hit 20 plus home runs and you'll be just fine with that. Let's have a therapy session for me real quick. Rowdy Tellez is on this list and it's been brutal. I've been trying to keep it in to myself, him, Adamas. I mentioned earlier with Rich Hill, Brewers are struggling. If you guys remember, I was team, let's draft all the Brewers at one point in time. Rowdy Tellez, 12 home runs, 14 barrels. It's an 86% home run to barrel rate, but you dig deeper, he's hitting 231. The strikeout rate's up to 25.3. He has a 259 BABIP, which is better than last year, but second worst of his career. You look at the barrel rates down to 9.3%, not Rowdy style, 39% hard hit rate, not Rowdy style. This hurts, and he's platooning now. So this isn't getting much better.
As he should. This is probably dual therapy, man, because we were both big time
Yeah, this is tough.
On Rowdy. And it's tough too, because like I run into this every year where like someone I really like gets off to a hot start. I feel all validated and you know, I made the right call. He's my man. And so I just leave him in and leave him in and leave him in. And I've been leaving Rowdy Tellez in on a good number of my teams. You look at the last month, 212 batting average, 272 OBP for Rowdy with two home runs. And then you throw this homer to barrel, 12 homers, 14 barrels. Like Rowdy's been lucky to even get to 12. So like there's some cause for concern. I'm not ready to cut in like 15 teamers. I don't know about 12s. Like what he
I'm torn.
Plays more 12s more than me. He's 100% in.
Oh yeah,
in 12. So you're holding on to him, I guess. But it's
you're benching him right now. That's the only thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like even this weekend. So like the Brewers get Rich Hill for at least one start. So now Rowdy probably plays two starts at best.
It's true. And that's where you get started to get in trouble. It's like how often can you play someone who's playing a little more than half the time, strong side of a platoon, but with the lack of production that Rowdy's had.
Let's have a fun one here because we talked about two Blue Jays on the other side of the spectrum. Let's talk about one on this side, Dalton Varsho. 11 home runs on 14 barrels, a 79% home run to barrel rate. Vlad had a 31%, Chapman a 27%. Varsho's from the left side of the plate, and they talked about right center field got pulled in a bit. But who knows if that's really the takeaway here. When you look at Varsho, barrel rate 7.1, 37% hard hit. Like X-Stats think he should be better, to be honest. Doesn't strike out a ton either. So what's your thoughts on Varsho? Like, I've never really panicked on him because I'm playing him at a catcher anyways, and he's crushing it in the catcher world. But when you look at this Bloom board, though, doesn't matter position. He's 11 homers on 14 barrels.
Yes. And so, like, Varsho was way over his head last season in terms of the homer to barrel, 68%, 27 homers on 40 barrels. And he's kind of feeling the other side of that. To your point, though, like we could nitpick Dalton Varsho, but like at the end of the day, the dude has 11 homers, 10 steals. He's only hitting 230, but like as catcher, that is awesome. And he's going to run. He's not going to have the best OBP or OPS in real life. He's not as good as he is in fantasy because of catcher and because he runs. But Dalton Varsho, I think, is just fine. I think you just keep your expectations in check that this is not. He wasn't a 27 home run hitter, in my opinion, last year. And if you keep that expectation to like low mid 20s, I think you'll be fine. And he'll pair that with 20 steals. So like you're getting a 2020 catcher who arguably should be hitting better than 228. The K rate has been much improved this season from Varsho, and the BABIP super low. So you mix those two together, and I think there's even some batting average improvement coming. So not worried really at all.
All right, let's talk about a player we talked about in recent weeks on a Bloom board because his production was kind of disappointing, especially for his ADP. That's Nolan Arenado. He's got 13 home runs on 15 barrels. It's an 87% home run to barrel rate. But he's one of those, like I know we just talked about, 283 average, he was 293 last year. He's probably going to get close to his 30 home runs like usual. His strikeout rate has gone up quite a bit compared to years past, but his BABIP's up as well compared to years past. And then you look at his quality of contact metrics, they pretty much are in line with previous seasons. So how do you look at this with Arenado? Is it like maybe his production is what it is and the home runs decline? Do we think his batting average go? Like, there's a lot of ways to go, I think, with this situation with Arenado because everything else is pretty similar, if not kind of better maybe. And then you got this situation.
The big thing for me with Arenado is April was so bad, so bad in terms of results and skills. If you were to pull up like a rolling average of his power, of his barrels, hard hit, whatever, Nolan Arenado has been much better in May, and that has carried into June. So like, I think the terrible, whatever was happening with Nolan Arenado in April, maybe he was playing hurt. I don't know. I think that's weighing down that barrel number right now. I think Nolan Arenado is going to be just fine, and he's shown us that in May and June. So like, I just think this is a case of a really bad April weighing things down. And like, yes, you could kind of nitpick and say, well, you're picking and choosing what you want to take seriously and not, but I don't think so. Like Arenado, the track record, he's fine. He'll be fine.
Yeah, I think we'll be just fine there as well. Anybody else you want to hit on here, or would you like to get to some listener questions?
Not really. I know he's kind of hurt, or maybe extremely hurt, but playing. Max Muncy was an interesting one, because Max Muncy, like, he has to hit home runs to be valuable for fantasy, because the batting average is so bad. Max Muncy has 23 barrels, which is a lot. 18 home runs on those 23 barrels. If we're taking that down to league average, we're saying Max Muncy should only have like 12 home runs. And then you throw the batting average risk that Muncy provides. And then you throw the, I'm playing through a grade two hamstring thing as well.
Yeah. Blows my mind.
Red flags. Yeah, red flags.
I don't understand that one at all. It's a very interesting situation, to say the least.
Yeah.
All right. So
he's worth a shout.
Yeah, for sure. Because he's also a guy last year that had the horrible start to the season, kind of finished strong and picked it right up where he left off. Listener questions, you guys came through this week. We appreciate it. John Wilder asks, what do you do with players that aren't contributing in stolen bases and homers? This feels like a Tim Anderson tweet. But are decent and average in runs. No, never mind. There's an average. Yeah.
There you goes the Tim.
Yeah. You keep plugging these guys in, but then you look at the standings and you have fallen behind in the toughest categories to catch up in. A player like Alex Verdugo comes to mind. This is, okay, the easy way to be like, well, it depends on your roster construction. But if he's falling behind, then that explains his roster construction. I guess size of your league. If it's 12-team or less, I've learned to just start booting dudes. And, like, I've dropped Jake Fraley twice already this year. I picked him back up at times. Like, Lars Nootbaar was on the IL. He got, like, certain dudes that fit those kind of molds. They're interchangeable. Like, go stream Jack Sawinski while he's hot, then go drop him and go stream someone else. That'd be my two cents.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add, like, at this point, I still think it's too early to take standings, like, to really act on standings and categories as your primary decision-making tool, because if you start doing that, if you start ditching your counting stat guys and try to go for homers and bags only, like your Trent Grisham type or somebody, you're gonna fall behind and count. Like, it's kind of a whack-a-mole thing at this point. So I think at this point, at least the way that I play it, is basically just I keep playing my best players, the guys we're playing all the time, kind of no matter the categories. At this point, it's a tiebreaker for me on Fab. Like, if I'm between two guys, then yes, and they're pretty close, I'll go with the homer to steal guy if you need it. But I think there's a caution there just to don't overreact too early. And I think it is too early on where you're at in the standings, unless it's like totally extreme. I would hedge a little bit more to where you need in terms of like free agent pickups, but I wouldn't go overboard yet. I think once you start to get to like August, I think that's when you really start, then you be aggressive in categories and chase that. I just think a lot can change over these next 3.5 months.
All righty. Boom Zoom. He asks, in a super league, 12 leagues, 12 teams. Interesting. Payouts to the top three in each league and top 10 overall. This must be the suit.
It's like an overall. It's like a 12 league team overall, main event OC or something.
In top 10 overall, as well as 1.25x entry fee for each individual cat winner. So individual categories get paid out too. Interesting. What are the pros and cons of going for cat leader titles? Currently in top three for runs and stolen bases, which correlate. Thank you. I think
that's kind of a cool concept.
Maybe you don't finish top three, but you win a couple categories to get some money back. It's keeps you grinding to staying active to try to win some money.
Yeah.
What to do? Well, I like to try to win the whole thing, but I guess if you're out of it, then start pounding categories.
I think that's what I would do, but I think that's what everyone would do. Like, if it's a 12 team league and you're like in 9th, 10th, 11th, and you know, even in your own league, forget the overall, in your own league, you don't have a shot. I would think most people, that's actually pretty fast. I would think most people would just take their best category, best two categories, one on hitter, one, and just leverage the hell out of that.
Yeah.
But then what does that do to your leagues? Like, if two other people in your league do that, that's kind of cool.
It's a hell of a conundrum, I'll be honest.
Because people will just dump categories, and so that's going to affect your league for sure. But
yeah, it's probably not the answer you were looking for, but If you're on the bottom of the standings, punt and get your categories. If you have a chance to win, try to win.
That's what I would do. If I was low at this point, and I think now would probably be the time. Like if you're low, like in double digits, I just pound a category, try and get your money back.
Yeah, that's what I do as well. Rand Simon asks, are you okay dropping Moncada in 15 team leagues? I think we said yes.
Yeah, easy drop.
How about CJ Krohn? I would, because he's still not even moving yet.
Yeah, it's not good, man. Like, no. Literally, he can't, like, walk. Probably shouldn't laugh, but it's bad. I think Krohn is a pretty easy drop. I think I still have him on a 15-team league, and I think that will change.
And with Nolan Jones hitting, it's going to make it even easier to be like, yeah, you can hang out back at home, CJ, a little bit longer.
Krohn is 94% rostered in main events and 15 teamers. So starting to get that drop, and that's going to go down because there's just no update.
We could recap that next week, and it'd be interesting to see where that number is at next week.
Yeah.
Because Rand says my main event bench already has Julio Urias and Mullins on the IL.
Oh.
Yeah, you drop Krohn
you gotta,
immediately.
And yes. Krohn.
Yeah, I said Moncada and Krohn gone. Urias should, knock on wood, be back next week. He had a good bullpen. He might throw one more. Their goal is to get him back next week. We'll see.
Any word on Mullins?
No,
I haven't heard much.
Just doing his normal thing. It's going to be a couple more weeks at least. No, there's really been no updates, which to me is an okay thing for me. There's no setbacks. Let's put it that way. I'm thinking grain of salt positivity here because I need setback. And trust me, if something would have happened, Mike Curlin would have
let me know about it.
Yeah, Mike Curlin would have let me know by now. So no news is good news on this front. Lil Book of Calm asks, Miguel Vargas has a massive gap between his production and his projection. If we prorate both season to date and rest of season bad X projections out to 600 plate, I love Lil Book's questions. Like, these are great.
Yeah.
The projection would have the standard projection would be 225, 15 homers, 7 stolen bases, 77 runs, 72 RBIs. The bad X rest of season would be 278, 22 homers, 9 stolen bases, 87 runs, and 82 RBIs. So much better. Do you hew more closely to his standard or his projection rest of season? Or season to date or his projection rest of season?
So that bad X projection sounds optimistic, which is pretty... Yeah.
Not like Derek.
Not exactly. 22 home runs for Miguel Vargas the rest of the way. I wonder if that... Yeah, I guess it's rest of the season. That seems high to me. Thing I'll say, though, Miguel Vargas, I actually want to look up, since this is the Homer to Barrel show, what his Homer to Barrel is. Like, the power has been decent. Yeah, he's right in line. 12 barrels, 6 homers. Power's been decent. He's not striking out. The big thing with Miguel Vargas is, like, I think he can write off a truthfully really bad April because he basically was hurt. And so I think you can kind of look at May and June where he's been better, hitting for a lot more power, strikeout rate kind of staying the same. And I think you can kind of extrapolate May and June the rest of the season. If that's probably what I would do for my rest of the season projection for Miguel Vargas, knowing that, tying this back to our Torkelson talk, this is a age 23 guy who was a top 5 prospect according to James Anderson earlier this season. And so, like, this could pop off at any time. So I'd extrapolate May and June, and that's probably what I would baseline for the rest of the year, but just know that could take off.
Yep, that's not a bad one. I'll give you that. Brent Chester says, "Ouchie, Rowdy is on the wrong side. He's been cold." Yes, Brent. Yes, he is. We'll have a meeting at FPEZ. And then Andy Splinter says, "Thoughts on Cubs new leadoff hitter Mike Tauchman? You gave your thoughts on him at the beginning, so yeah, we're good there." That'll wrap us up. Another episode in the books, my friend. Final thoughts as we are approaching, like, the getting closer to 50% through the season.
Yeah, we're like a month away from the All-Star break. So we're getting there. Mm-hmm. We are getting there. I'm glad my comeback has started now. So I've got plenty of time to smoke you by the end of the thing and get that free golf.
I've said the whole time you're going to win. I've said that the whole time. I'm not naive to the situation. So you'll bring the fastball here soon enough, and I'll get smoked. So I'm ready.
We'll see.
It's okay. I'll win my beer bet from last week.
Oh, we did. Yeah. So I did. We did post a beer bet to tie this back from last week. What do we have from the poll? It was Taylor Ward versus
Michael Harris.
Michael Harris, dude.
Matt Harris on fire.
Come on.
You guys are welcome.
Michael Harris this week, probably over Taylor Ward. No, the results of the poll were 67% in agreement with me. Harris over Ward rest of season. 32% for Ward. We'll see.
It just tells you how much more popular Ryan Bloomfield is than me. So you got that.
Yeah, I think it was Ben who replied and said I should have kept it anonymous. If they listen to the show, they know who picked who.
Yep, it's all good. All good. It'll be fun. It's a fun one, and I have a feeling we'll have some more debates throughout the season. Maybe we'll have more bets on. Maybe we'll do our barbecue lunch on the line. We'll have some fun there, because there's a lot of things we can debate for FPAS. It'll be a fun trip, but we'll wrap it up there. Maybe some torque. We'll think of something for torque, because I am a believer in torque. You could do it now if you want, or you can save it for later.
I'll think on it. Got to think of the numbers.
All right, you think about it, crunch them. I'll take it, and we'll move on from there. But everybody can find Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Remember, if you want to golf at FPAS, hit him up or hit me up on the Twitter. Podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am at BD Intric. Until next time, this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 61. Catch you guys later.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.